The University of Georgia Griffin campus invites you to join us for news and information about the many and varied programs and activities at the UGA Griffin campus. Information about gardening, the agriculture programs, and your UGA degree at the University of Georgia Griffin campus. Your UGA degree is closer than you think. This program is made possible by Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray and Company Realtors. Listen each Thursday at 9 o'clock a.m. for the UGA Griffin Campus News. This program is produced by WKEU AM 1450 and 102.3 FM and The Rock 88.9 FM and streamed live on our website, WKEUradio.com. Join us now with our guests from the UGA Griffin Campus.
Welcome to this week's installment of the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News, broadcasting from the UGA Griffin Campus. We are joined today by Dr. Sherry Dorn, an agriculturalist and State Master Gardener Volunteer Coordinator, who has an office on the UGA Griffin Campus. And now that she's through with all her doctoral studies, maybe she'll have more time to actually spend here, but maybe not. Dr. Dorn, welcome back to the program. Today we're going to talk about holiday decorating with natural vegetation.
There you go.
So, you know, for the listeners who have not heard you before, we had you on, I don't know, maybe about 6 weeks ago, where you had some of your extension volunteers on and some of the virtual programming, but today we get to face-to-face it, and just remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and your recently attained academic honors.
Oh, yes. Well, okay, so I have been here at the University of Georgia in the Department of Horticulture for 10 years now, so that's just gone really fast, having a lot of fun here at Georgia. But I do come from Virginia and have studied horticulture at Virginia Tech, and I get to work with some of the best volunteers in the state, our Master Gardener Extension volunteers, and also get to work with folks on ornamental plants.
Well, before we get into the decorating with, you know, ornamentals and for the holiday season, let's just touch on the Master Gardener program.
Sure.
Is that something that year-round people can sign up for to become a part of classes in, or is that, does it tend to start in the spring of vegetation?
It's pretty cyclical. Right now, in our county offices, they are gearing up for the training season, which usually kicks off around January. So are in the process of talking to people who are interested in the program, recruiting them, getting them through the application process and all of the background screening and so forth that goes into that, again, in preparation for our January training season.
So it starts in January. What ages roughly are inclusive in the Master Gardener, at least at present?
Sure. So the Master Gardener Extension Volunteer Program is an adult volunteer program. I get asked this often. So we start at 18, and just as long as you're able to physically find a spot in the program and volunteer, we'll take you.
And roughly how, what corners of the state have a Master Gardener now? I know it's expanding, but, you know, is that a fast process or is it something that takes a little time?
No, we have a presence in all four districts. So Extension is divided into four districts for the state of Georgia. So we have programs in all four of our Extension districts, but we are most heavily concentrated in the northwest portion of the state, and second after that is the northeast portion of the state.
Any theory as to why that would be?
Oh, absolutely. It's where our people are. It's where, you know, our populations are. So you get, you know, cities and counties with populations, and you start having the number of questions and the number of, you know, the demand for horticulture information that really necessitates the volunteer support to Extension programming.
Well, you know, Georgia is, you know, what, 10 million people plus, and so you divide that into four districts, you're looking at 2.5 million per, I mean, it doesn't, the math doesn't exactly pan out that way, but I think the point is made, when it comes to the soil quality or the differences in soil, but say, between the southwest region and the northwest region, a little bit different. Does that present a challenge?
It is a difference, but that's not the critical ingredient for a volunteer program. It gets down to, you know, the number of people and the number of questions, the demand for programming. Master Gardener programs just really have a critical mass in terms of, you know, how we can get the programs off the ground and to deliver information and so forth. And it's, you know, like, for example, we have programs in around Valdosta and around Albany and over on the coast in Savannah. So those population centers in the southern part of the state.
expansion, you know, how quickly from when you started as the coordinator to now, now how has it grown?
It's really not grown tremendously, not changed in terms of numbers, but I would say in terms of the programs and the volunteer hours, we continue a steady uptick. The numbers and so forth, again, the counties are based on those population centers, and so that hasn't necessarily changed tremendously in terms of our extension structure.
Has the end of COVID helped? I mean, a lot of stuff you were having to do virtually, you might get to do a little more in person now.
That's kind of an interesting bag there, because when you ask me what the differences were, that's really the difference that I see. Our virtual work has really increased in the last few years, and that really changes our volunteer dynamic, or demographic rather. So we tend to get a different cross-section of Georgians that come to the program, and that really changes what we're able to do. So we still do a good bit of virtual programming in addition to the face-to-face in-person programming. And so both of those options work for us.
I would be intimidated at first doing it virtually. Mm-hmm. Did you find that to be the case for you and some of the volunteers?
Oh, sure. In fact, when we launch a big change, or, you know, try out a new something or another, we try to pilot it for a good year at least before we go official, you know, with something. And so COVID gave us the time and the space to test some virtual programming options, and we learned a lot. And we learned it here in Georgia, but we also learned it right along with our colleagues in other states. So we weren't alone in terms of what we were doing virtually with the Master Gardener programming, both with recruiting and training volunteers, but also in terms of the education and programming that we're able to give to the public. So, yeah, we learned it together, and we had the space and the time to figure it out.
Well, we could spend the whole hour just on the Master Gardener program. I wish we could, but we'll have to save that for a future episode. Yeah. But the last time you were on, you had volunteers with you, and you were working with military veterans.
Yes.
Has there been any thought to maybe some other groups that might can start participating within the program? I mean, like, to me, medically homebound people,
sure,
especially now that, you know, virtual is much more accessible,
yes,
to you. You know,
yes,
there are other, you know,
yes,
dynamics,
yes,
that you can reach out to.
Yes.
Has that been considered?
Yes, absolutely. And I will say that nationally, there's a conversation going on how we can deliver programming to, say, incarcerated individuals. And so they can benefit from the horticulture programming as well.
Well, the Pit Bulls and Parolees program is done very well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you would think that this would be no different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that will, yep, occupy the time and make them productive.
Well, horticulture has had a long history with individuals who are incarcerated, and with our youth at risk programming with plants and landscape training and so forth, we see a reduced reoffense rate. So it's really effective at giving training, professional training most of the time is the direction that takes. And individuals come out, they have training so that they can get job placement. We can give them enough training, and if they pass the tests, they can get pesticide certification in some states. And then that really does give them a way to become employed and really, you know, start on a fresh start.
Well, I applaud you for all the hard work you've put into the Master Gardener program. Of course, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, mm-hmm, you couldn't do it alone. How many volunteers, roughly, how many Master Gardeners are in the state?
Yes, so we have about 2,500 active at any time.
That's a higher number than I would have thought. 1,000 would have been a laudable goal.
Right, so, right.
And does that stay fairly consistent year
it
to
does.
Year when somebody has to, you know, step out, someone mm-hmm. else is there?
Yes.
Is there a waiting list, or could the program have 3,000 volunteers, for example?
Yes, there are usually waiting lists at the counties. So the county level is kind of the gate for the program, because that's where our volunteers train and it's where they serve. And so it's dependent on how many projects and how many slots that we have available at the county level as to how fast that number expands.
Well, now to jump in this week's topic, Thanksgiving is 1 week from today, so people are going to start decorating their homes, and, mm-hmm. you know, the day, either Thanksgiving afternoon or the day after is a traditional date for many people to start decorating for Christmas. How difficult or how easy or how attractive is it to use natural vegetation in your home design?
So I think it is very easy. All right. That's my opinion as a horticulturalist. I think it's pretty easy. In fact, I like it because I don't have to store it from year to year. I can just go out to my gardens or, you know, whatever area that I have permission to collect from, and I can collect plant materials and use that in my decorations.
That's interesting. Now, is this cost prohibitive? I mean, is there cost involved, or can you do this, you know, if you have permission from, you know, you find a spot that has, you know, hey, that plant looks nice, this plant looks nice. It might be a wooded area. But, you know, if you do purchase, how cost prohibitive is it?
So, let's back up and say gathering, make sure you have permission. Don't be snipping your neighbor's shrubs without their permission, or, you know, trespassing on lands that we don't have permission to visit. But if we're going to purchase greens, you know, it really is dependent on your personal budget. You know, it just depends on what you're going to purchase. Being the frugal person that I try to be, time will impact that for me. But, you know, I try to get as much as I can gathered and reduce the amount that I purchase. I've got a project here that I hope we're going to get to talk about.
I think we should already, because I'm interested to know what it is you brought.
But that, when I went to purchase the supplies for this particular project, and I'm going to hold off on that. I want to save that till last. But this particular project, I was pretty surprised at how much money I actually did spend for the supplies for this. So I think it really just varies, you know, what you can repurpose, what you can reuse, what your style is. And I want to say off the, you know, right here at the top of the hour, I am no floral designer. My sister has that gene. I did not get that gene, but I enjoy what I do. I enjoy it in my home, and that's all that matters.
So you grow them and she styles them.
Sort of, something like that.
Well, I mean, that makes for a pretty good family business guys ever decide to go that route.
That's right. Well, she's very, very talented as a floral designer, but I didn't get that gene.
Now, what are some of the uncommon materials we might all have in our backyards or adjacent areas that we might not be considering as plant material that we can use in holiday design?
Yeah, so very common in Georgia landscapes. We have holly of all kinds, you know, native hollies and non-native hollies, hollies with many of them have red berries. You'll find some with like a blue-black colored berry. All of that is fair game. We have a lot of evergreens, arborvitae, juniper. Eastern red cedar is a juniper that is native. That makes a great holiday decoration. We have cypress of several different sorts. So all of those are really great evergreens for making garlands. You know, you got to look for, if you're going to make garlands, you have to have, you know, a foundational green in large supply, something, you know, you can get a lot of. So going back to your economic question, it wouldn't be very economical to go buy a bunch of, say, spruce or fir or something like that and turn that into a garland. You would be better off buying like a manufacturer, you know, a pre-made white pine garland or something that you can get off the retail. But if you're going to make it, you know, you're going to have more access to things like Leyland or arborvitae or juniper.
What ornamentals can we bring in? Are there some that are still alive this cold snap that will provide color to our decor?
Oh, sure. So that's what I call the odd and unusual stuff. And you want to use that as your accent, because if you go cutting large portions of that plant off, it will most likely disfigure things like, I have some Camassiparis, you know, that have gold foliage, and that would be very attractive as an accent. Or if you have any sort of variegated boxwood or variegated holly, those are not going to grow very quickly, so you don't want to snip on them heavily. So use those as like accent materials. In the previous list of things that you ask, you know, what do you have laying around your yard? You know, that's always the fun challenge. Go out and see what you can do. I meant to mention also that one of my favorites is a dried hydrangea blossom. In Georgia, nearly every yard has a hydrangea of some sort in it. So you can grab some of those dried blossoms. I like to hit them with some spray paint to give them a little glitter, you know, a little sparkle. And so those can be something you would never really, you might not think about as a decoration, and it's right there at your fingertips. But back to those odd and unusual things, you know, things that you just don't want to use a super huge amount of. Another piece that you don't find super often in landscapes, but if you've got a neighbor that's a gardener or a floral person, they might have some Harry Lauder's walking stick, and that's a contorted deciduous shrub, and makes for some great vertical interest in your floral arrangements. Some of your neighbors, if they've got the space to grow like a weeping willow, a corkscrew willow, something like that, you might get something like that that also has some interest to it.
Well, so far we've concentrated on the visual, but yeah. one of the things that reminds me of the holiday season are certain aromas.
Yeah.
Are there plants that we can incorporate that will give us some of those memorable scents?
So you can always...
I mean, pine is always going to smell piney.
Yes, yes. Your evergreens, to some extent, are going to have that kind of fragrance. Junipers, you know, will be pretty pungent. And, of course, if you purchase a cut tree like Fraser fir or Douglas fir, they're going to have those traditional holiday scents that'll come in with the tree. We can go back to our fruits, like our citrus, our oranges and our lemons, and slice those and dry those, and you can have the citrus scent to it. So not something we necessarily grow in our backyard, but it is, you know, a plant product. And of course, cinnamon sticks, we can add those into our decorations as well.
Well, so that gets us to Thanksgiving and the centerpiece and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But then the next day, many of us go out and we start really ramping up for the Christmas season.
Mm-hmm.
And decorating is one of the top activities for families mm-hmm. to engage in. Are you a natural tree or artificial tree? I mean, being a horticulturalist, you really do both.
I do both. Yes, we just enjoy decorating as a family. So,
now, yeah. Are you a Christmas tree in every room or close to every room type?
No, not that much. I don't have the room to store all of that stuff. But we do have a cut tree. It's always Fraser for our family, always. But just that smell, you just can't beat it. So we always have a Fraser. I do have a smaller artificial tree that I put in our family room area, and the kids have little tiny trees, and now they're in school, they're at college, so I anticipate they'll take those back with them to their dorm rooms after Turkey Day. So
now you have mentioned, can we use plant materials to adorn our Christmas trees?
Sure.
Is that a safe and economical alternative?
Sure. Yes, and in fact, talking about going from Thanksgiving to Christmas, if you're really clever, you can transition some of those materials.
And they will they'll stay vibrant.
Depending on what they are, more your dried materials. You know, if you wanted to use your dried hydrangeas in your Thanksgiving centerpieces, you could very easily transition those to, you know, your Christmas holiday decorations. If you use like wheat sheaves or, you know, grass sheaves or anything like that, grasses, you could use those for Thanksgiving and then use those as vertical elements in your Christmas holiday decorations. They would be great, you know, especially in containers on your porch, you know, giving again that vertical interest, because those grass sheaths are going to be pretty vertical.
Now, in growing up, did you and your sister, did y'all kind of search out alternative ways to decorate even then, or is this something that you cultivated this as an adult?
So our mother pretty much had ideas about how she wanted to decorate the house, so it didn't include us in our ideas.
No
so
contributions.
Much. No,
okay.
Go fetch the boxes, that kind of contribution. But so that's really been things that we've developed on our own.
Well, you know, how does inspiration strike? I mean, you just see something and say, hey, that would look nice there. You just, or is it something that you actually think about, or is it one of those you know it when you see it type opportunities?
All of the above. And I'm a very good imitator. So other people can have fantastic ideas, and I'll just, you know, spring from that. So all of our listeners here, many of you have access to Pinterest. You know, it's a great, fantastic idea board. Look around and see what other people are doing. Get your ideas. Get your concepts, and then go out into your own landscapes and where you have access to materials and see things that will provide the same function, the same form.
Now, wreaths, do you know how to make a wreath? Because I tried and I failed miserably.
I have done several. I'm not great at it. I tell you, I enjoy it for my own purposes. But if you came to my house and looked at it, you would say, oh, that's nice. You know, yeah, it's not stellar. You know, that's okay. And I want all of our listeners to feel confident in what they do. I'm not gifted in floral design, but I enjoy what I do for my own home. And that's the purpose, you know, enjoy.
Well, you know, we've talked about, you've at least touched on some of the materials we can go out and readily find within neighbors' gardens, with their permission, of course, or in wooded areas, or even in stores. But are there some materials that we probably need to avoid for the sake of children or small animals?
Yeah, so I did a quick look, and I want to say to folks that if they've got concerns about pets consuming plants that they bring in at the holiday time, the SPCA has a nice list of plants that are toxic to dogs, cats, and horses. So that's readily available online. And if you're concerned about little people, you know, ingesting things or, you know, messing around with your decorations, then Poison Control also has a list. So I real quick went down those three respective lists. And interestingly enough, things like poinsettias, which, you know, if you're going to buy a holiday plant,
that's ubiquitous.
Right. So those cause problems for our dogs and cats. And they're a source of irritation for humans. So they have that latex sap in them, and that can be problematic for our skin, so problematic to people. And things like our amaryllis bulbs and our paper whites, which are a daffodil, and our cyclamen, and maybe calanchoe. Some people will use calanchoe as, I don't think of it so much as a Christmas plant, but anyway, those types of plants will have concern for our four-legged friends. Whereas this I found interesting, Christmas cactus, which some of you may have blooming right now. I know mine are heavily budded and getting ready to just show off, more like a Thanksgiving cactus. There is a Thanksgiving and an Easter and a Christmas cactus. But anyway, those are considered non-toxic, so to our pets and to our people.
And mistletoe is toxic.
It is. Mistletoe is a problem. So is ivy. I didn't realize that, but ivy is a problem for our four-legged friends. So, yeah.
Well, I have a problem climbing up high enough to get the mistletoe. Where can I find lower reaching?
So often mistletoe can be sold, but in Georgia it is, you know, an invasive plant, so you won't find it for sale. But goodness, I don't know about it. Just depends on the tree that it's established in.
I mean, it's about a 25-foot high tree, and I'm like, I really don't feel like risking this for just a little mistletoe.
Right. Yeah. You know, usually are plants that. It's my observation anyway that by the time the mistletoe establishes in the trees are, you know, pretty unhappy and pretty unhealthy anyway. I don't know. You just have to look around for a low branching tree.
Now, how do we keep this fresh? I mean, obviously outdoor conditions are better because it's going to get more regulated air, humidity, you know, hydration. So how do we keep our plants fresh in the house, particularly if we think we can make it last from Thanksgiving through the Christmas season, which is going to be hard to
do. That's a trick. Yes. All right. So let's talk about duration first.
Okay.
2 weeks is a really good estimate, keeping things looking great, you know, with minimal types of effort. So if you've got a special event, if you want it to look great on Christmas Day, then you might want to wait till the middle of December to pull out the stops. If you've got a party, you know, or an event, something like that, then, you know, don't wait till the day before to put your decorations up because you'll be worried about food and cleaning and all that kind of stuff. But you've got a 2 week window when things are going to look really good. So you can, without hesitation, put your decorations up the week before. If you're like me and you start literally the day after Thanksgiving, then you will want to take into consideration a couple things. One, where you place it in your home. Is it hot? You know, are you getting access to, is it, you know, right next, in close proximity to a heat source, like a heater or gas logs or a fireplace or stove? Or is it in bright, direct sunlight, you know, things that are going to dry it out. That's going to really shorten the life of your products. And so if you're trying to extend the life of your greenery, then you want to keep it in cool areas and places that don't have super bright lights to it. Some of the other things that you can do if you're making arrangements, and you can use a floral foam as a base. You know, you can obviously keep the floral foam hydrated. You can do some misting. That helps a little bit, but the mess, you know, the drift and the overspray and the risk to your furniture can be a problem with that. The other thing is that if you have your pieces laid out and some things just start looking kind of sad and done for, you can toss those either into the trash if there are things like ivy and mistletoe that need to be disposed of, or if it's, you know, other things that are compostable, you can pull them out and put them in the compost pile. But just replace those sprigs, just kind of trade out those that are getting tired and not looking their best.
Well, speaking of replacement, I was thinking about this because I had not considered it until I was listening to your answer. But let's say you have made a killer centerpiece. Yeah. And say, hey, I like that. I want to keep that. Yeah. But some of the things I have around it are starting to age and wither or whatnot. Have you ever had a year, or do you do this commonly, where you might keep your centerpiece but kind of change the accents around it?
Sure.
Can you give us an example of what you've done?
Just keep it looking fresh. You know, magnolia is another one that we use a lot at the holiday times, and that will last a long time, but it'll start fading out and gets really brittle. So if you like that fresh look, I mean, it's very easy to pull those surrounding greens out and freshen those up. I think more of things like holly sprigs, where the berries might start dropping. And that's obnoxious, you know, to have those things rolling around the floor. So, you know, I'd rather just pull those sprigs out and maybe replace them.
What doesn't work in your experience? I mean, you know, there's 1,000 things that work. So there's got to be at least 5 or 6 that just don't.
Yeah.
Or can you think of anything offhand?
Yeah, I've tried using some distillium because I have a lot of that in my landscape, and found that especially if I've got newer growth at the tips, you know, it'll wither, and it just doesn't have the presence that I thought it would, because the plant itself is fantastic in the landscape, but it just doesn't seem to have the presence when I put it into foliage decorations. Anytime you get stuff that's real tender, it can wither, you know, especially that newer growth, if it hasn't fully hardened off by the time you're collecting it. This time of year, things are getting, you know, headed pretty well into dormancy. So you can have some disappointing results that way.
Do you cut your own Christmas tree, or your husband, or?
No, not when we live here in Georgia. So we wanted to make the trek up to North Carolina, where they're still grow, you know, where they grow Fraser's, but it never seems to work out. We're too busy at holiday season. But when we lived in Virginia, yes, we would take the kids out and let them cut the tree.
Is there a secret to it? I mean, I know trees aren't exactly your field of expertise, but you're familiar enough. Mm-hmm. Is there some trick? You will hear people stick to the theory of the diagonal cut.
Sure.
As a means to extend the life of the tree. Does that really work?
So whenever we're telling people to cut flowers, we'd say give it a slight, cut at a slight angle. When we tell people how to take cuttings for propagating plants, we say cut at a slight angle. And the thinking behind that is that we're giving that cut just a little bit more surface area. It's just a little bit more area for water uptake. And that's what's going to, you know, make the difference. Water uptake is what makes the difference in how long that cut tree stays fresh, or those cuttings, you know, the cut flowers, all of that stuff stays fresh. So,
well, you brought up an excellent point a few minutes ago about making sure that you protect your natural vegetation in your home that you're going to use for decorative purposes away from heat sources, the mm-hmm. stove, you know,
yep.
heating vents,
yep.
you know, gas logs, things of that nature. Do you take precautions with your Christmas tree as well about what ornaments or lights that you might use?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a lights guy. That's my favorite part is the lights.
I know. Well, see, I am the daughter of an electrician, and my dad had the light responsibility at our house, and he was very good at ensuring that was a well-lit Christmas tree. So it's not so much a big deal when you've got an artificial tree, but the live tree, the more lights you put on it and the longer you burn them, the faster that tree is going to dry out. And, you know, even if you keep your tree tree stand full of water, it's still going to, you know, make a difference. And and we love our tree. We love our family time in the living room, you know, turn it on. So we enjoy it. But by the time Christmas is here, and certainly by New Year's, that's a pretty crispy critter.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you do yours traditionally the day after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. How long does it last? When do you decide it's time to come down? Do you wait for it to dry out, or do you say, okay, it's first of the year, it's time to transition?
Well, a lot of it depends on our holiday schedule, you know, if we're traveling or something like that. If we've traveled, been away from the home, we won't relight it, you know, after Christmas. But I traditionally try to get it through New Year's. And again, it just depends, you know, each year.
Are
each
you
tree,
successful?
Most of the time, yes. But I'm very cautious also. So I want to, you know, make sure our listeners, you know, are thinking, you know, smartly about that tree. You can tell. All you have to do is just run your hands along the branches. And if it is shedding those needles, then please, you know, don't light it. You know, be use common sense there.
Have you had, can the outside weather conditions have any effect on the indoor? I mean, other than people might turn the heat up if we're in a cold snap like we are now.
Right. If it's really chilly, our heating systems are going to be running extra, and that's just dry air. You know, it will suck the moisture, pull the moisture out of that tree.
What colors do you prefer? All right, we'll start with Thanksgiving. What colors do you prefer? And then we'll transition into Christmas. Or do you kind of stair step as you said, after 2 weeks, sometimes some of the plant material can start to dry out and lose its color and lose its, you know, its vivaciousness.
Yeah.
So, you know, stair step us through the colors of the holidays.
All right. So traditionally, Thanksgiving. See, I like to even start back at Halloween. I buy pumpkins. I love them. They're beautiful. They are a plant product, okay? And the more warty and the more different colors, the better, the more interesting they are to me. So usually I will bring those decorations, as long as the pumpkins are still sound, I'll bring those into the Thanksgiving holiday. If I'm decorating for Thanksgiving and I have my eye toward Christmas, you know, trying to bridge that gap, I might go something like white pumpkins or even blue pumpkins, because you could transition those into white and blue Christmas decorations if you wanted to. If you're going to go the orange route, there's still plenty of berries and green foliage and leaves and things that you could make work with that. But I think orange is really a harder color to incorporate in a Christmas Christmas plan.
It doesn't really fit.
Yeah. So if I'm gonna really be efficient and blend from Thanksgiving to Christmas, I'll probably go the white pumpkin route or the blue, and that can look very elegant with silver and glass, you know, glitter. You can even, you know, go with gold glitter if you want to jazz it up a little bit, but you could work those colors in.
Now, was it just me this Halloween season and now right that we're here, almost here to Thanksgiving, that I saw more colored pumpkins available commercially, or is that just something I didn't notice before?
I think you're seeing more of them. I don't have any market studies to answer that soundly with, but just as a consumer out and about, there were plenty of choices, and that was exciting.
I mean, I had very rarely did I see white pumpkins for sale prior to this year, and they were all over the place.
Right.
And now that you've mentioned blue, I'm going to start hunting that.
Yes.
Now, for the people for Halloween, and I know that's already passed, but there will be another one in about 11 months. Are they harder, or is there any difference in carving a colored pumpkin as opposed to the traditional orange?
Well, if they end up actually being gourds rather than pumpkins, you know, you can have a harder rind to them.
But this should be serviceable if you choose to go that route.
Yep.
I mean, I could see myself doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we've talked about the things that don't work. What have you tried some things that you were pleasantly surprised, where you just kind of were spitballing, so to speak, that you were throwing ideas off the wall and said, you know, maybe this will work, and you turned out that you were pleasantly surprised, or maybe something you didn't think would work, then, you know, that really worked out nicely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not opposed to using a little spray paint, so you add a little paint, whether it's red or silver or gold, to some bare sticks. I've been really pleased at what I can get out of vertical interest like that. goodness, I'm open to anything. There's osmanthus, you know, that to the untrained eye, you would think that was holly. That will work. And there's a nice variegated goshiki osmanthus that you don't want to prune too much on. Don't want to prune it too heavily, but it's got a beautiful foliage to it. And that is pretty interesting.
Well, and introducing spray paint into the mix, particularly if you're going to use some of your foliage, does it make it last just a little bit longer? I mean, will it maintain the color?
Maybe.
Or is it about the same with or without the paint?
I usually paint things that are dry. So I was thinking about magnolia. Some folks will spray a magnolia leaf with gold, and I would think that that paint would reduce the loss of moisture out of that leaf a little bit. Is it measurable? I don't know. You know.
Well, it's funny you say that. I had a neighbor Sunday who was raking up. He said, I love my magnolia tree in the spring and summer. This time of year, not so much. But now I can use the leaves, and he would be happy for me to take them off his hands.
You could. Well, a couple of years ago, Sarah, who works with me in the Master Gardener Estate Program Office, she and I worked on magnolia wreaths. We were experimenting with those, and they lasted a long time, and we did not treat them. We did not use an anti-desiccant. You know, we just used the straight magnolia leaves, and we put them on clips and inserted those clips into styrofoam wreath forms. They were beautiful. They were really stunning. And in that case, it was very simple. So if that's what you have, you can indeed do something with it. But you're still going to have the investment of the wreath form and the wire picks. And those were not super easy to bend around the petiole of the leaf. If you're in the floral business, you have a nice machine that all you have to do is, you know, pull that handle down and it will clamp the clip right around the plant material. But we were doing ours by hand.
Well, a lot of people like to decorate the entire house and even the kitchen where there's going to be a lot of activity around Christmas and around Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Do we have to be mindful of the plants that we use because of the heat that's going to be generated in the kitchen?
I'd say leave your kitchen to closer to the time you want it to be spectacular. So, you know, don't maybe not do your kitchen right away.
What are some of the more unusual or even common ways to dress up a wreath? If you can make the perfect circle, which I cannot, but if you can do that.
Well, let me talk about wreaths for just a second, because we touched on it a little bit earlier. But if you want to make your own wreath form, you know, you can harvest your grapevines, your wild grapevines, and twist those into a wreath shape. And I know what you're saying about the perfect circle. I had a nice oval one that I used for years. So you got those. You can buy your base. You know, you can go and buy a ready-made Fraser fir base or pine base. And I like to do that because, like I said, it's hard. It's hard on your hands to bend those wire clamps and things down to hold those greens in place. But if you want to be frugal, maybe you want to make your own, use your Christmas tree, you know, the base clippings or something like that. So be it. Knock yourself out. And then I mentioned the magnolia wreath, and that base was actually a styrofoam circle that we were inserting the leaves into. So there's lots of different ways to do the wreath. And we can't not talk about pine cones. We have, you know, a number of different types of pine cones here at our disposal. And
and they're hardy and kind of heat-resistant, cold-resistant.
Yeah, so and they'll take spray paint if you want to do some spray painting, you know. Gold pine cones are particularly attractive. So we've got those basics. I mentioned earlier the citrus slices. I really like a slice of orange or lemon or something that I can wire to a wreath frame. I like the berries. You don't tend to see so many blooms on a wreath because they're going to be very short-lived. So you're going for things that are going to last a little while. And you probably want some bold foliage, whether it's magnolia or holly, you know, just something that's going to give you some contrast to those, what typically is smaller needles.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned pine cone because that is the one area where I know it's Christmas time. when I go to the big box stores and in the little red netting, I can find the cinnamon pine cones.
There you go. You can smell them.
I have to buy one and put it in my car.
Right.
That's how I know it's Christmas. Right. I associate cinnamon with the season.
Yes.
So what other uses do we have for pine cones? I mean, they're great in a centerpiece.
Yes.
I mean, you can make, even for children's projects, if you're looking for something for them to do for the few days they're out prior to, there are plenty of creative projects.
Sure.
You can make turkeys out of pine cones.
Or bird feeders, you can slather those pine cones with peanut butter and, you know, roll them in bird seed rather, and tie them up and hang them off of a tree. So yes, there's lots of things. Even just a simple basket of pine cones is attractive. So sometimes simple is best, and you can set that, you know, on your porch in a rocker. I actually have a fireplace at my house that doesn't have logs, and, you know, it's just an empty fire box, really. And I dress that up with a basket of pine cones at the holiday time.
I could be totally wrong on this, but you strike me as the type, Dr. Dorn, that would use all sorts of creative planters. Do you? I mean, you know, some people use I don't know what you call them, but the little gardening pails with all the holes in it, the old school.
Oh, you bring me to an idea. Someone fast forward and, you know, skip down our list. And I had some projects on there, things that people might want to do with their decorating.
Great idea to mention them.
There you go. So you can make kissing balls, you know, if you've got that's usually a floral foam base or a styrofoam base, and you got all your greenery stuck in there. You might want to put some pine cones or something in there. We talked about garlands already, but... All right, so I told you, you can go out to Pinterest, spend some time, set aside some time, see what people are doing out there. But a blogger shared using an antique colander to make a centerpiece. So, you know, something that you wash your vegetables, drain your vegetables in. And the antique ones, enameled ones, tend to work. They seem to have more characters, just seem to work pretty well. So the ones that have a base, so if you can imagine the bowl of a colander, but then there's also like a pedestal base. And if you flip the whole colander over, she used the holes that are, you know, part of the colander as a way to thread wire through and attach greenery. In her case, she used some fir, and then some pine cones and berries and things like that to conceal the colander. And then she used some fairy lights, wrapped that around. But that, what is the pedestal base when the colander is in its rightful use, that becomes a place to set a candle. You can use a flameless battery operated candle if you would like, or you can put, you know, a hurricane type glass, put your candle in the glass holder so that you don't have that flame right up against the greenery.
I was getting ready to ask. That would be my only concern.
Right.
So you would probably need something on top of the colander. But, I mean, the way you're describing it, I see this. I see my wife doing this in our sink right now.
Yes, it was clever. And I thought, golly, as pathetic as my floral design skills are, I think I could pull that off. You know, it's fairly simple. And it's reusable, you know, from year to year. So that was a pretty clever little thing. One thing I didn't mention earlier that were used on that particular project were like dried rose hips, and they're pretty striking. They can get some bright red color to them and can be of interest in holiday decorations. We mentioned wreaths. We talked about that. All right. So and before we go on to my last project, I wanted to throw in potted plants because we got all kinds of potted plants. Some of us are crazy about plants. I mean,
I prefer potted plants over flowers, but that's just a personal choice.
All right. And I can tell you that every year I seem to be accumulating more indoor plants. And, you know, I notice it because, you know, when it gets chilly in the fall and October and I start bringing everything in, I'm like, oh my goodness, I've accumulated some more.
Some people are cat people. You're a plant
person.
That's
right. That's right. That's right. So if you're looking for holiday decorations and you don't want to acquire something else, you want to use what you have, then just use those beautiful indoor plants. Put them in attractive baskets, tie some bright holiday ribbon around it, make an arrangement, maybe clump them together. I saw some folks that had a ladder, like an A-frame ladder, and so they made a quote-unquote tree by putting all of their plants on that A-frame ladder. That's okay. I even saw some ideas out there where pots, you know, your flowers, flower pots were embellished with letters that spell out holiday-themed words. And so in this one example I saw, the folks chose the letters J, O, and Y for joy and adhered those to their containers and then put their plants that they already had in those pots, and it made a festive arrangement. So those are good options if you don't want to acquire something new to take care of, or you want to, you don't have a lot of space or something like that. And of course, we haven't really talked about our traditional holiday plants, holiday potted plants, other than poinsettias. We mentioned amaryllis bulbs and paper white bulbs, and those are really fun to grow with kids, especially if you're going to start. You can even start those right before Thanksgiving because they need about a 6-week window to hit bloom. So if you want them in bloom at Christmas time, you want to start them a little bit before Thanksgiving, but fantastic activities to do with kids. Lots of holiday cactus and cyclamen are out there. All of these are just beautiful and will bring color, holiday color, into your house in a potted form that's maybe not quite as needy or, you know, you're not quite so worried about it drying out as others. There's also orchids and the rosemary trees. Oh my goodness, I've tried the rosemary trees. Rosemary just does not like that dry indoor climate. So I usually lose my rosemary tree, but they certainly are very tempting when you see them in the retail. So maybe leave those outside on a porch or something like that. All right, so we got all those potted plants, but here's, all right, we've been waiting. Shall I talk about my project?
Yes, I want to see what this is.
I was dancing all around this project. All right, so I came across this idea. I told you I don't necessarily have the ideas myself, but I'll certainly try somebody else's idea. And I came across a tree, a holiday tree made out of succulents. I mean, if you're not worried about water, succulents are the thing to do. All right, so the jury is still out as to whether...
It looks like it came straight out of the Arizona desert.
So I've been trying to gauge interest as I've walked from my office over here, and I was gauging your interest. And usually if some people like something, they're like, "Ooh, what is that?"
Yeah,
I haven't gotten any inquiries.
No, I'm fascinated. Like I said, it looks like something you'd see in an Arizona landscape.
So let's back up. So this is a Christmas tree. It's meant to be a tabletop decoration, and it's made out of succulents. So succulent plants have a different sort of metabolism and don't use as much water. They're very efficient with water use. And so we like them because we can ignore them, forget to water them, and they're going to be just fine. So they come in all different colors and textures. And succulents have been something that have really, really become popular, especially with beginning gardeners, because of that, you don't have to water them a whole lot. So you can get a lot
of
different
practice plant.
Yeah. You can get a lot of different colors and textures. All right. So how we made a tree, a Christmas tree out of succulents. So I started with a clay pot. And in my example here, this is a 6-inch clay pot. It's an unglazed clay pot, which means that, you know, water will move through it. And because we have this cone-shaped thing filled with plant material sitting on top of it, we needed some ballast. We needed to keep that pot from tipping over. So inside of this pot are a bunch of rocks. I literally just went out in the yard, and I mean, I get a lot of rocks that work up through my garden soil, so they're in there. That's just to weight it down. Okay, then, I like to do things with what I have. I looked around, and I had some poultry netting, you know, what we call chicken wire, and I cut myself a piece, a rectangle, that was about it's 8.5 by 17, what is it, legal size sheets, 2 legal size sheets of paper taped together. That's roughly the rectangle that I started with, and if I were going to do this again, I might do it a smidge longer. And I worked that rectangle of chicken wire into a cone shape. So I, you know, started at the bottom to get the widest circumference so that it would sit down in the 6-inch pot, and then gradually worked it up and narrowed it as I got to the top. So chicken wire is not really friendly to your hands.
No.
And I used a pair of pliers to twist and shape that. And it took me, you know, probably almost an hour just to shape the cone. And I wasn't going very fast because I didn't want to shred my hands. But once the cone was made, I then stuffed it with some moss. I think that sphagnum moss will be a much better choice, but I had access to, this is green Spanish moss. Again, well, I just went to the store.
I like the green hue of that.
Right. So it's kind of festive, right? And I hydrated it and I used gloves and stuffed that cone full of the hydrated moss and then set the cone down in the pot. And then I began tucking in pieces of succulents. You'll see these little pins. These are floral pins that floral designers use, but they are used to anchor the succulents into the tree. So what I have here, let's see, I think I counted 28. No, that's, yeah, I had seven four-packs of succulents that I bought. And that's where the expense came in, was buying the succulents. And, you know, these will hold a long, long time. You're going to want to put a little moisture into that moss because it'll dry out. But if you're lucky and you have a good base and a good contact with the base, they'll actually start rooting in some time. So while you have an initial investment in it, it can last a long time. Now, I have a lot of green moss and wire still showing in mine. I stopped because I really wanted some different colors and textures than what I had in here. If you have succulent gardens already, I mean, I have a lot of pots of them, a lot of them. You could, you know, just use clippings to cover something like this. This is something that you could start in the summertime and get it really rooted in. And then when you bring it in, you know, it's very easy.
Well, I like the array of colors that you've used, but how would you describe the color of this one? It's got green, but it's not as deep as green as some of the other succulents, but the kind of purple hue towards the tip. Yep. So how would you describe that color?
Some of them have a reddish blush to them. Those are plants, probably if I put them outside in the sun, that red color would really deepen. But when you bring them inside, they lighten and they're more green. We do have a bunch of different shades of green. I like the blues and the grays. You can get those in your succulents. And, you know, something more echeveria type that's rosetted, I could see sitting up on top, you know, as your accent piece. Another thing that you can do to make this more Christmassy is to come back in with, like, your sprays of rose hips and pin those into the cone so that you have a more of a reddish color. And rose hips would, you know, kind of be similar to an ornament, you know, like a hanging ball or something like that on a traditional tree. So it kind of evokes that sort of decoration.
Well, what's amazing about this, and I, you know, I'm sorry to gush over it, but if you had not, you know, mentioned that there were some, you know, some pins holding it, I would have thought that was a natural creation. I thought you were, when you first brought it in, I said, okay, we've got a new breed or something that's not here in the common to the South. So no. We're going to have to find out what this is.
Yeah.
So this is a Sherry Doran creation.
Yeah, but I can't take credit for the idea. I borrowed this from one of our, you know, one of our Pinterest blog influencers or whatever. But
how much time did it take you, roughly? I mean, and again, you said you went slow, but I would too, because chicken wire will destroy your hands if you let it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so probably 3 hours total, you know, gathering the supplies and putting it together. Like I said, the building of the cone took some time. And you can't go super fast putting the pins in because you want to disguise them, first of all, and it's real easy to break off your succulent leaves, you know, so you want to be gentle. You know, work on it over time.
So this is a 3 or 4 day project as opposed to trying to do it in an afternoon. Or if you did it in a day, a little in the morning, a little in the afternoon, maybe a little in the evening.
Yeah, I worked on this yesterday afternoon. So it was definitely an afternoon project, but I'd already purchased my supplies several days prior to that. So like I said, you know, that's all part of the project.
Well, not to give Pinterest too big a plug, but can you think of any just offhand other ideas that you might have seen this season that might be on the Sherry Doran future list?
Well, I really like that colander centerpiece. I felt like I could do that with my skills, but you know, always the front porch the baskets and the buckets. And I really think, I personally like the antique look. So using your antique wheelbarrows and your galvanized buckets and your old watering cans, those can really bring character to your displays.
Watering can. Yes. That's the term I was looking for earlier.
Yes. And we have a lot of old watering cans at our house. We think they're charming. So they, you know, you put a bunch of holly or magnolia in there, and it just, again, it doesn't have to be expensive. It does not have to be this, you know, materials intensive or anything. It can be quite simple and have a lot of charm.
I am a big fan of the rustic look, and mm-hmm. I think that's what using antique type items like that brings.
Right.
So
right.
Any final thoughts, anything that our listeners need to know about plants? Because I mean, before we let time get away from us.
Yeah, I would just say, again, have fun with it. Don't worry about whether it's Pinterest worthy or, you know, like I said, it's easy for me to have a complex because I know how excellent my sister is at this kind of task, but I enjoy it. And my home feels festive and it smells good. And that's what you do. Do it for your joy and your pleasure. And I hope you have a very wonderful holiday season.
Well, and you too, Dr. Dorn. I appreciate you taking the time. What do you do? All right, so now we're in the holiday season. What are you going to do between now and the end of the year? I mean, I know there's a lot of family travel, and you mentioned your schedule is very hectic. Is that more professional or personal or a mixture of both?
It's a mixture of both. But a lot of personal things.
Do you get to do greenhouse gardening at this time of year, or is that just something you're not a fan of?
When you say greenhouse gardening?
Like when you're planting, I mean, are you a transplanter?
Yes. So are you asking me, do I start seedlings and things like that? Yes, that will start after the first of the year. But yeah, we are a year-round vegetable gardening family. So, you know, greens and things like that are in the garden right now. So
you can do asparagus. You can do all sorts of, you know, Swiss chard this time of year.
Yes, yes. Just harvested the kale last night for dinner. It was delicious. Yeah.
So you've got it going on. And Dr. Dorn, we appreciate your time. Let me get these couple of announcements in. The Young Scholars Internship Summer Program applications are now being taken here on the UGA Griffin campus. It's a 6-week paid internship for high school eligible. You got to be at least have finished your sophomore year in school and be 16 years of age by the time of the beginning of the program, which will be June 1st this year. The deadline to apply. You have time, but don't dilly-dally. January 31st will be the date. Visit the UGA Griffin campus website. It's griffin.uga.edu for more information. And the UGA Fall 22 graduation is set for Thursday, December 15th. That's going to be at 10 a.m. right outside where we are at this moment on the lawn of the Student Learning Center. The brick laying ceremony, which is tradition here on the campus, will follow immediately afterward. And again, Dr. Sherry Dorn, thank you so very much for your time and your knowledge and your creative skills. That's and everybody's house, now that we take your advice from the past 57 minutes, and we're going to have a festive-looking home for the holiday season, and we can't thank you enough.
That would be fantastic.
And listeners, we thank you for your time, and we hope that you'll join us after the Thanksgiving break, the week after Thanksgiving, the first one in December, for our next installment of the UGA Griffin Campus News.
Thanks for joining us for today's program of UGA Griffin Campus News. Listen each Thursday morning at 9 for UGA Griffin Campus News on WKEU AM 1450, 102.3 FM, and The Rock 88.9 FM, and streamed live on the WKEUradio.com website. Today's program was made possible by Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray & Company Realtors.